You're listening to Alternative Stories and Fake Realities. This is the ASFR podcast. Find much more at alternativestories.com.
Let me introduce myself. My name is Laura Ashworth. I'm the daughter of Michael D. Ashworth, probably the wealthiest businessman in Britain, if not Europe. Driven by greed and greed alone, I can say that I'm family. He's built up an empire, stretching across the continent, acquiring companies and enterprises like a kid collecting football stickers. He stands for everything I don't. Brash, bold, shameless, unsubtle and rude. He says,
I know what I want, and usually I know just how to get it.
And he does get it. Pretty much every time. He's mastered the art of the deal. But here's the thing. There are always losers. Always what he calls
collateral damage. We can't all win after all. That's life.
Of course, I've benefited from this wealth. Educated at one of the best public schools in England. No pressure to work in my holidays or tend a bar in some noisy students' union. No need to join a trainee scheme for would-be city traders or learn how to touch type. I'm drawn to an academic life. Understated, quiet, but something I can use my brain for, and something that isn't going to trample over others as I make my way to the top. Well, in theory, anyway. Naturally, this ambition brings me into conflict with...
So how's that going to earn you money? Where's your ambition? Look at yourself, jeans and a t-shirt every day. Get yourself a smart dress or a business suit. You're a pretty girl. You should use that.
Ugh. And it's not just my dad.
Laura, darling, you could be so beautiful if you just wore some makeup or did something with your hair. Don't you want to be... like us?
And of course, I didn't. Hated the brashness, hated the showy wealth. Let me give you an example. So Dad buys not just one, but four Rolls Royces. Each of them are to be located in the main areas where he does business around Europe. One in London, of course, one in Frankfurt, one in Zurich, and one here in Athens. And the registration plates? Well, he takes letters from the start of each of his names, Michael D. Ashworth, and comes up with Midas. So we have Midas 1, 2, 3, and 4. Sometimes I just despair. So, I mentioned that we're in Athens. Dad is trying to do this deal with the most powerful businesswoman in Greece. And I think he may have met his match. She's super intelligent, cultured, sophisticated, and incredibly charismatic. I met her once at a reception ahead of the first meeting between the company negotiators.
And you must be...
Laura, Mike's daughter.
22 years old, first in classics from Oxford, specialising in Greek and Roman drama, about to embark on a master's course at St. John's College.
Wow. How do you know all this?
I make it my business. Let me get you a drink.
And this is really weird. She seems to conjure a full glass of wine from nowhere. Out of thin air. I looked for a bottle, but there isn't one there. How did you...
A magician's assistant when I was younger. He chose me for my beauty, as all men do, but pretty soon I knew more tricks than he did. And
so he turned you into a frog?
I'd like to see anyone try to turn me into a frog. Let's just say I have all the magic now. Cheers.
And she smiles this smile that suggests we're sharing an intimacy, that she has somehow drawn me into her world.
Let's find a quiet corner, shall we? I want to get to know you a little better.
And I follow, thrilled by this attention and drawn to this charismatic woman. As the weeks pass, the deal progresses slowly. I spend days on end sifting through archive material in the National Library, visiting ancient sites, trying to catch drama performances to improve my Greek. Finally, a deal is done. Dad is bragging about how he's finally got the better of her. In the end, the deal rests on Dad being able to replace all of the board of directors of the Greek company with his own people. Only Constantina will survive. Reluctantly, and over a proverbial barrel, she concedes and they sign.
Collateral damage. There always has to be some collateral damage. That's business.
On the night the deal is signed, we are invited to a dinner party with Constantina and a couple of her more important advisors. Wine flows, and she tries to steer the conversation away from business. She's barking up the wrong tree with Dad, because business, and only business, is where he's comfortable.
Let's play a game. If I could grant you each one wish, what would it be, Laura? Anything. Anything at all.
She turns to look at me. I blush and founder. To be able to bring peace and harmony to any situation, to resolve conflicts and offer a compromise.
Ah, a peacemaker. I'm sure you'll achieve this ambition. Your wish is granted.
She smiles as she says this, but somehow I can believe that she does have the power to grant wishes.
And you, Mike?
Oh, I don't know. Something to make me even richer? That everything I touch turns to gold.
I think he's joking, but you never can tell with my dad. The greed coming to the surface once again. What do you give the man who has everything? Literally more of it. Everyone laughs, but I catch Constantina's expression, and for a split second this look of disgust flickers across her face. The party ends. We take taxis across town to our hotels, and I fall asleep with my copy of the Iliad open on my pillow. In the morning, I wake to the sound of commotion in the next room.
Shit! Shit! It's happened!
I throw on a t-shirt and rush into my parents' room, and my worst fears are realised. The room glitters with gold. The bed sheets, my father's footprints across the carpet, his iPhone, all gold, catching the light through the half-open curtains.
Oh my God!
And he's actually grinning. He touches a chair and it's gold, touches the curtain and it turns to gold.
You idiot! What have you done? Don't touch me, you moron! Christ, I was in the same bed as him last night. What if he'd reached over and touched me in the night?
But how could she grant that wish?
I don't know, but for now, keep your fucking hands to yourself.
I'm sure people wouldn't turn gold if I...
Let's not find out, eh? I don't want to be a golden statue, thank you very much.
Mum, let's get out of this room. If he touches us, we'll be turned to gold. Dad... For God's sake, just stay here.
But I'm starving. I want to go for breakfast.
What the hell? Order room service or something. Just don't leave this room.
And we go to my room, lock the door, and my mother cries on my shoulder. We discuss our options. Maybe the effect will wear off. Maybe it's all some sort of illusion. Maybe... But there are no answers that satisfy either of us. In 5 minutes, we hear a knock on my father's door. A voice says,
Room service!
And before we can react, we hear the door open and this awful scream. In our hearts, we know what we'll find in the room next door. The poor girl couldn't have known what was going to happen. About my age. A tray in one hand and her outstretched hand closed on a gold banknote. My dad must have tried to tip her, and in that moment her hand touched his, and here she is. A statue of solid gold. Her face a mixture of horror and incredulity.
I didn't mean to. I was just so hungry. But even when I tried to eat the food on the tray, it turned to gold in my fingers. And the coffee, just liquid gold.
And so we're stuck in this awful situation. But I know what I must do. I usher my mother from the room, lock the door from the outside. I'm going to see Constantina. Only she can resolve this. If this carries on, he'll starve to death, but probably turn us and half of Athens to gold before he does.
I want to go and sit with him. I'm scared, but he needs my support.
Mother, if you go in there, we both know what will happen. Go to my room and lock the door. And so I go to the office of Bacchus Industries, ask at the reception desk for Constantina, and am ushered to a sumptuous office with views of the Parthenon and carpet that your feet sink into. Everything feels expensive and wonderfully tasteful. Constantina smiles at me.
Laura! I've been expecting you. So the wish was granted?
Yes. Literally, everything he touches turns to gold.
No, I meant yours. To be able to bring peace and harmony to any situation. To resolve conflicts and offer a compromise. You've come here to do that.
I suppose so. But the curse you placed on my father, how did you...
Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to. Now, about this compromise... I grant you, Laura, the power to reverse your father's curse by the simple act of touching him. Once you do that, within seconds, he will return to normal. No more gold, the Midas touch, in reverse.
But if I touch him...
You'll turn to gold. Yes. Oh, you must have heard the story of King Midas at school. The daughter turns to gold. And remember, you wanted to bring compromise, and I granted you that wish. This is my compromise. There is, as your father loves to say, collateral damage in every business transaction.
But I'm panicking now, trying to think of a way out of this awful dilemma I've been placed in. I don't want to be turned to gold.
Then don't. Just walk away. You have the choice.
But I know that unless something is done, my father will die of thirst or starvation. He'll probably end up turning my mother and me to gold anyway, and goodness knows how many others to whom he'll offer untold riches in return for a cure that will be impossible to deliver. The business will fail. Hundreds could lose their jobs and his reputation will be ruined. If I accept your offer, can you return the waitress to normal also? The one my father turned to gold.
Of course. How very considerate of you, Laura.
And she smiles, that knowing, superior smile. The one I want to scrape my nails against and draw blood from her perfect skin. You're a fucking bitch. I hate you so much. And I want to cry for the situation she and my father have placed me in. And for the sacrifice I must now make.
Don't get angry with me, Laura. If you don't like it, just walk. Refuse my offer.
But she knows I can't refuse.
knows I'm bound to go through with her compromise because of my wish and because of who I am. Then something occurs to me. But why this? Why not just demand all the money in my father's bank? His business to lift the curse. You could be the richest woman in the world and we could all pretend this never happened.
Because I already have all the money I'll ever need. Because I want to hurt him. I want him to lose something the way I lost something. Because I want something unique and beautiful that money can't buy for myself. Artists always talk about their struggle and their sacrifice for their art. But you, Laura, you get to be art. To actually become a work of art. As a lover of the classics, surely you understand the power of that.
You want something unique and beautiful. You mean...
The statue! The gold statue you will become. Of course I will keep it. You'll stand in the alcove by my desk.
And she points to the back of her office, an empty alcove, and my insides writhe and do somersaults with anger and terror at what is to happen. She wants me as a piece of art in her office. And I'm going to agree to it. In the limousine to my father's hotel, she sits beside me. Before we left her office, she offered me a drink, which seemed to take away my fear and still my racing mind. Something approaching steely calmness has quelled the churning terror. I let her take my hand, gently squeezing it from time to time. I am to be a work of art for her, to please her, priceless and unique. A solid gold statue. She has dressed me in a Prada mini dress.
Classic. Shows off your figure beautifully.
My hair tied back. For the first time in months, I've paid attention to my appearance. The irony is not lost on me. We enter my father's room and he looks surprised at the delegation that greets him. Myself, Constantina, four of her staff, muscular guys in sharp suits and sunglasses. I turn to Constantina and say, "The waitress." And with just a brush of her outstretched hand, the girl is restored to flesh, collapsing to the ground with a gasp.
"Now. Do it, Laura."
And without hesitation, for my father and mother, for Constantina and for myself, I step forward, my hand outstretched.
Laura!
Laura, no!
And just as I feel the soft, cool touch of my father's skin, I see the tip of my finger illuminated in yellow light. A cool breeze seems to fill the airless room and bright, golden light fills my peripheral vision. It all happens more quickly than I imagined it would. Stabbing sensations of coldness through my limbs. The breath seems sucked from my lungs in an involuntary exhalation. And a feeling of heaviness as first my legs and then my arms lock into place. The tingling buzz in the pit of my stomach intensifies, chills, and spreads to the tips of my fingers and toes. A sharp metallic taste in my mouth, and then The world seems to go into misty slow motion.
Laura?
What?
I'm aware of movement.
What have you done to her?
My father screaming.
You monster.
The sensation of being lifted. And then, of stillness and peace. Vaguely, the voice of Constantina. Gently
so
soothing.
Beautiful.
Fingers.
So. Beautiful.
Tracing the shape of my face. Lips. Kissing my golden cheek.
Thank you, Laura. I never thought you would agree to this. The courage to do what you did. Knowing what you would become. Inspirational. I will look after you. Keep you safe. So, so precious. Precious.
Collateral Damage featured Tiffany Clare as Laura, Sally Richards as Constantine, and Georgie Lauritsen as Carol.
This is Alternative Stories and Fake Realities, King Midas and the Golden Touch. In Collateral Damage, we compared the greed of the world of business to that of King Midas in his wish that all he touched became gold. As a king, he would have already have been a wealthy man, and his wish seems to come from a desire to become ever more wealthy, just as the character of Mike in our audio drama wished to expand his business empire through the acquisition of the Greek company fronted by the mysterious Constantina Bakis. Laura's fate in the story echoes that of the daughter in the classic story from mythology. In many versions of the story of Midas, a pivotal moment is the one in which the king, forgetting his newfound powers, touches his daughter, and she turns into a golden statue. In the poem Elegy for Midas's Daughter, that moment is captured from the perspective of the daughter herself. It talks about the way that time can seem to stand still or behave strangely in moments of consequence. Imagine the horrific moment between Midas, forgetting himself and lovingly touching his daughter's cheek as she tries to comfort him and her transformation to gold. What thoughts would pass between them in that awful fraction of a moment between the action and its inevitable consequence? The reader in Elegy for Midas's Daughter is Kelly Winkler. It was just a moment like a million others, in a life of ephemeral moments. But you could not measure it in time, not in the soft tick-tick of the hands of a wind-up pocket watch, not in the slowly tumbling grain-on-grain of an egg timer's sandfall progress. Momentous time like this cannot be measured by machines. They say time stands still in such moments. They say the world seems to hush in the presence of consequence.
Hearts skip beats. Breath is caught. Radios fade to background fuzz. And pets look up from lazy dreams. Silence, they say, is golden. It was just a moment, just a brush, a careless touch, a heartfelt gesture, paternal loving fingers upon a daughter's cheek, for my attempts to soothe, and your need for the reassurance I tried to give, perfectly normal, except for the wish you'd made. And in that just a moment, as time stands still, I hover between life and something else. Between flesh and gold, between a woman and a work of priceless art, as though a woman is not priceless enough, as though a daughter can be bought or sold. I want to shout, "You fool, you fool! You've turned me into gold!" Knowing that the die is cast, engines set in motion, magic on the prowl, and deep inside my body cells already changing, blood slowing, turning cold. Heart stopping, turning gold. But breath will not come through golden lungs, nor words through golden lips. And seconds later, your accidental work complete, I am a golden statue in a room of gold. My curious expression of surprise at what you did, stunned to silent contemplation. Why would you do that? Why would you touch me when you wished what you did? Your greed fulfilled betrayed you in a moment of love. And you have your wish once again, a man used to getting all he asks for. All you touch, you said, turn to gold, you said. But did you mean me? And what will you do now that I am timeless gold, unspeaking, unmoving, statuesque? Will you sell me for the riches you craved? Melt me down for jewelry? Smelt me in a furnace to forget what you did? Or spend a life crippled with mute regret? Not at that moment of love, but for the wish you made to slake your greed, and of all the places greed can lead. We know that the transformation of his daughter to gold is the turning point in the story, the point at which Midas starts to regret his decision and prays for his power to be reversed. It's difficult for readers not to ask themselves whether he shouldn't have anticipated the problems that his wish would cause, that his food and drink would turn to gold before he could consume them, that those people he touched would become golden figures. Perhaps his greed blinds him to this consequence. The thought of a vast wealth he would accumulate with this new ability outweighs the risks it will create. Or perhaps like Mike in Collateral Damage, his wish was not entirely a serious one. Either way, the consequences are dire, and none more so than for his unfortunate daughter. Thank you for listening to the Alternative Stories and Fake Realities podcast. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe to learn about past and future episodes. If you would like to learn more about alternative stories or contribute to future episodes as a writer, actor, or composer, please visit alternativestories.com.